The Equality Act makes clear that the concept of sex is binary. A person is either a woman or a man, and interpreting sex as a certificated sex would cut across the definitions of man and woman, and thus the protected characteristic of sex in an incoherent way. So that was one of the reasons of why they decided to do the ruling. Because if they didn't, that's what they said would happen. The biological interpretation of terms in the Equality Act, which we conclude is the only correct one, does not cause disadvantage to transgender people with or without a gender recognition certificate. So nothing in the ruling is intended to discourage the appointment of transgender people to public boards or to minimize the importance of addressing their underrepresentation on such boards. That is what it kind of means in short. It was a bit confusing because when I first read it, a lot of stuff was saying that it was stripping them of their rights and that they weren't going to be protected. Like, the media sensationalized it in a way that it made it seem like transgender people were no longer going to come up under the Equality Act in terms of being a protected characteristic in their own rights against discrimination and harassment, whether it's direct, indirect, whatever. But I think from what I've read, more of the upset actually came from the fact that it felt that it was the continuing trend of attacking minorities. So there was a transgender activist who quoted saying that this step is the UK following in the footsteps of Trump America, saying that despite there already being provisions in place to protect transgender people in the legislation, the ruling is continuing a trend of attacking minorities, because you're saying that businesses that will only provide single-sex toilets will prevent transgender people from being able to work, and the current protections against discrimination should be limiting the immediate impact on day-to-day life, which it isn't. It was kind of like a whole thing about how are transgender people going to live their day-to-day lives if people like this, businesses, will refuse to have anything but single-sex toilets. I guess they would feel like the cases for discrimination wouldn't be as visible, because they would be abiding by the new definition in the legislation, if that makes sense. I hope this is making sense. But yeah, that is what happened. 16th of April, 2025. There was a big kind of landmark change in how legislation is going to be understood, enforced, and things like that in regard to women's rights and transgender women's rights and just transgender rights in general. I'm going to leave it there, leave that to sit for a bit before I come back, because there are some specific impacts that this has had on single-sex spaces, on sport and the aftermath of it. There was a whole bunch of protests that happened, and I want to talk a bit about those, as well as the Supreme Court itself, and our current Prime Minister, because he ended up being blasted quite a bit in the news. I mean, he's been blasted quite a bit just in general, but specifically as well from this. So I'm gonna play a quick song, let that sit for everyone, because I do feel like I just blurted out a load of confusing terminology and wordings of stuff. This song is from the playlist. I've played this artist a lot. I absolutely love her. This is Annie DeRusso with her song Legs. It's the clean edit, and it's off of her album Super Pedestrian. So I hope you guys all enjoy.
Legs on the dashboard, legs in my sheets. Everybody wants you, I think you want me. Thank you.
Renaissance Coffee is open at SFU. Parminder and his team have been serving the SFU community with great coffee for more than 20 years. If you're looking for a wholesome meal, delectable desserts, or something to warm yourself and lift your spirits, Renaissance Cafe is the place to be, featuring fair trade espresso beverages and brewed coffee. Renaissance Coffee is open Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Well, how do you get up and go?
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday, you heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
And welcome back to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM, where we just heard the song Legs, the clean version, by Annie DeRusso off of her album Super Pedestrian. And if you've just tuned in, I have been talking a bit about the ruling from the Supreme Court in the UK on the definition of a woman in legislation. And I wanted to speak a bit on what this now might mean for single-sex spaces, because there's been a lot of talk back home of what is the impact, what's this going to look like, and things like that. So I was reading what a senior law lecturer in Scotland speak about for this, and he said that it would be that a transgender woman with a gender recognition certificate would be excluded from single-sex spaces, but also can't say she's being discriminated against as a woman because of this ruling. So single-sex spaces can now exclude people with gender recognition certificates, which I've realized I've been saying that term and haven't maybe explained what it is. For people that don't know, it is a legal document saying someone has changed their gender. So there will still be conditions which need to be satisfied. Services will have to show that excluding transgender people is a limited and proportionate means to achieving a legitimate aim, which in itself I feel like is a very kind of vague, not really in depth there, but there is already Equality Act guidance, which allows for women-only spaces such as toilets, changing rooms, hospital wards in certain circumstances. So it says this could be for, quote, reasons of privacy, decency, to prevent trauma, or to ensure health and safety. So this is what this could mean for single-sex spaces. It implies that workplaces will need to provide separate spaces for people on the base of biological sex. But in terms of sport, because this is an area that's kind of, I remember it being a bit of a gray area, because there is exemptions for gender recognition certificates there, but because of this judgment now coming into play, there could be a whole kind of reassessment as to the way it's looked at in sport. So I'm not sure fully on what that is, because I don't think even people in organizations in sport even fully know what that is yet, because it's coming up to being 2 months since this ruling was given. So there's, like I said, there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. I found it interesting reading this statement that was given by, because there was quite a few transgender advocacy groups that were there and that were speaking on this, but this kind of statement really stuck with me. And it's a director of the advocacy group Trans Actual UK. that said, the judgment opens up a can of worms, and at the moment it's not clear which spaces this applies to, but if the ruling means any space that you might associate with women can now be used to exclude transgender women, it means we can't participate in society. And that statement really stuck with me, so I wanted to include that, because I think it's important to be reading both sides of this, understanding why there is such a push from women's rights groups, like For Women's Scotland, as to having this clarification, but also what it potentially is meaning on the other side. And I wanted to talk a bit about, so our current Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, is a Labour Party leader, and he has come under a lot of fire. He's been in power for coming up to a year now, and as I've said on previous episodes of Sociologic and Open Mics, this is a landslide change in UK politics, because we were a Conservative government for about 14 years. So it's been a long time since anyone else has been in power. So Labour got a landslide victory last summer, and it has been very interesting because his popularity dropped pretty much as soon as he got into office, and it's just kept dropping. And it's interesting seeing how the political scape has changed and what he's trying to do to rectify that. And this didn't help on what his statement was, because in March 2022, when he was leader of the opposition, he told the Times that, and this is his quote, "A woman is a female adult, and in addition to that, trans women are women. And that is not just my view, that is actually the law." And then a week after the UK Supreme Court ruling, his official spokesman was asked if the Prime Minister still believed in his statement from 3 years ago that a transgender woman was a woman. And he said, "No, the Supreme Court judgment has made it clear that a woman is a biological woman regarding the Equality Act." And this has led to a whole debate with the Conservative leader accusing the government of U-turning their stance and needing the Supreme Court to tell them what to think and things like that. So I just wanted to put that in there because I find it quite interesting how much of the news focused in it. I feel like it took away from the ruling. It took away from the people that the ruling impacts, because it was so focused on the Prime Minister and his downfall in like popularity, to then looking at this and how he was going back on what he said when he wasn't in power and when he was in the opposition trying to get to power, and now he's in power, he's switching his tune, which is what is said to happen with a lot of politicians. They say all these things to get in power, and then once they get in power, it all changes and things like that. So I'll leave that one there. That was just what I thought was quite interesting. But another thing that I kind of questioned a bit with this was the actual Supreme Court, because I took a little look into the judges of the Supreme Court, and there is, I don't know how many, but there is quite a few, and there are only two female judges in the all of the judges of the Supreme Court, and they're like at the bottom in order of seniority, which I thought was interesting. And so I looked a bit into the history of it as well, and there's only ever actually been a total of five women being appointed to be judges of the Supreme Court of the UK, with the first one being Baroness Hale of Richmond, who served as deputy president from 2013 to 2017 and then president from 2017 to 2020. And she's been the first and only female president. So this, to me, this structure is severely lacking in diversity across both gender and ethnicity when I was looking. Only having two women currently serving as Supreme Court judges for a decision that was predominantly impacting women, and yet there were still three male judges also in the decision process, making that the majority for the decision making being from men. And I thought that was just really interesting, looking at it from that perspective, that this is a big thing for women, it's a big thing for transgender women, and just for transgender people as a whole, and yet there isn't a single transgender judge in the Supreme Court judges, and there hasn't been yet, and there was only two female judges that are on the, I don't want to, the group, the the judges, the committee maybe, I don't know. But there's only two women there. And those two women, yes, they were involved alongside three other men. So they were still in the minority in the decision making anyway, let alone being in a minority of Supreme Court judges. So how can they have an ability to represent the full spectrum of society to fairly address cases involving such diverse populations like this when they aren't accurately representing it themselves? So I went and looked back a bit at when this changed and when, like, if there was even a rule against LGBTQ plus people being in the Supreme Court, because I wasn't sure. So it wasn't until 1991 that they removed the requirement of Supreme Court judges having to be married. That's when it made it possible for those that were a part of the LGBT plus community to apply. So because obviously same-sex marriage didn't happen until around 2014, this taking away the need to be married allowed for people to apply that were part of this community. But yet no Supreme Court judge has been openly a part of the LGBTQ plus community, yet they were a vital side to this debate and this issue that's been ongoing since 2018. And in the UK judicial services, there have been three openly, I guess, members of the LGBTQ community, which is the Right Honourable Lord Justice Fulford, the Right Honourable Lord Etherton, and Dr. Victoria McLeod. But they are not as high up as the Supreme Court. They are on the lower levels. And the Ministry of Justice in 2020, so pre-pandemic or during pandemic, statistics show only 6% of applicants that year were openly LGBTQ+, which accounted to being three applicants total. So it's severely lacking in diversity. And it's not going to be just the case for this ruling and this issue, but across the board, ethnicity as well is severely lacking in diversity for issues, for people to be deciding issues that aren't directly relating to them, to me is a big kind of pitfall and problem. And speaking of Victoria McLeod, she's a former judge and British lawyer, and she's the only UK judge to ever publicly say they are transgender, has actually announced an intention to take the case to the European Court of Human Rights on the grounds that it failed to hear the human rights arguments from individuals. So we could be hearing a whole lot more on this topic and what happens with that coming into play as well. But there was a whole heap of protests in the direct aftermath. So we know that this ruling came in, was announced on the 16th of April. Protests were then held on the long Easter weekend from the 18th to the 20th of April. There were thousands gathering at a rally in London's Parliament Square on the 19th. It was organized by a group of 24 pro-LGBTQ plus groups. There were seven statues vandalized during the London protests, including one of the women's suffrage activist Millicent Fawcett. And I remember seeing a whole heap of protests happening outside Parliament to do with this. On May 2nd of this year, 14 national LGBTQ plus charities sent a letter to the Prime Minister requesting a meeting, saying that the ruling has created, quote, confusion and a significant lack of clarity, upending the understanding of the Equality Act. So they're arguing it's actually gone against the reason for the ruling, which was to provide clarity on the legislation. And then later on in May, the four largest Pride events in the UK, which is Birmingham Pride, Brighton Pride, London Pride, and Manchester Pride, jointly announced they would prohibit any political parties from sending official representatives to their events in a, quote, unequivocal solidarity with the trans community. And this led to Pride, Glasgow Pride, saying they would follow suit. Then we had on April 29th, the Scottish Football Association banning transgender women from participating in women's football for the next season. May 1st saw Football Association announcing that transgender women would no longer be able to play in women's football in England from the 1st of June. Also on the same day, England Netball announced that it would be banning transgender women from women's netball from September 1st, and that a mixed netball game would be made available. And on May 2nd, the England and Wales Cricket Board announced that a previous ban on transgender women in elite women's cricket was extended to recreational cricket with immediate effect. So you're already seeing this ruling have immediate effect on different things in the UK. A lot of people had sport as a big one, as they didn't know what was going to happen, because there was nothing in the ruling, I guess, that was specifically talking about sport. But we're seeing kind of this domino effect of organizations happening and more segregation and, I guess, ostracizing. I hope that's the right word that I'm thinking of groups. Since the legislation. So I'm going to be interested in how this develops because it's still ongoing. But for me, one thing that I really questioned over this was who is deciding these changes in definitions. And looking at the Supreme Court, it's worrying because if we're talking about a definition of a woman, why is it not a group of women deciding that, or a group of women and transgender people coming together to decide that? Why is it a mix of two women and three men? So when has a woman ever decided what a woman is in legislation? How are we coming up with these definitions? And also what this change is going to mean societally and societal perceptions, because even though they say it's still going to be a protected characteristic in its own right in the Equality Act, people are just going to read the headlines of saying transgender women are legally now not women and things like that. So how is it going to change societal perceptions of the people that will not read the legislation properly and get this kind of misinformation on what is happening? So that is what was happening in the UK for the past two-ish months, roughly. It's a very weird place to be in because I feel like we're just seeing this snowball in a bunch of different countries in different ways. Things like this are happening in effect. I'm going to be intrigued as to how this plays out and what happens if it does end up going to the European Court of Human Rights on what that will change in regard to this legislation. And how it's enforced across the UK, because it is covering both Scotland, Wales, England, and I believe Northern Ireland, but it might just be Scotland, Wales, and England. I'm not 100% sure on that. I would not hold me to that right there. But thank you so much for tuning in. Stay tuned as Connor has BitCouver coming up from 8 to 10 p.m. He's got a really exciting episode for you all. And tune in again next week as I'll have another topic. I believe I'm going to be doing something related to jury decision making in rape and sexual assault trials, kind of following on to the joint conversation I was having with Corey last week, which should be really exciting. So yeah, hope you all have a lovely rest of your evening, and thank you all for tuning in. I'm going to leave you with the song Brazilian Soul by The Knox featuring Sophie Tucker.
The praia in the sun, the far in the night, garota brasileira dancing into the daylight. De swing e rebolado, don't know how but I try to. Seu jeitinho, your carinho, something that I'd fly to. Quer saber de onde só, brasileira, meu amor, Brasil. Quer saber de onde só, brasileira, meu amor, Brasil. Brazilian soul, I'll always remember. todo el mundo pamba. The alma brasileira, drinking coffee with a capoeira. From New York to Pará, Helena to Paraná, São Paulo to Cantinho, Miami and the in-between. Quer saber de onde sou? Brasileira.